Welcome to Symmetry of Soul, in-depth web-based study for able and willing students of the Urantia Book. Tonight, paper 116, section 6. It is experiential deity. It has been for weeks, and it's going to continue to be. Remember, no matter how much of God we may attain, there will always remain much more of Him, the existence of which we will not even suspect. The quest for God is endless. And we've been starting some of that endless quest for God right here, unpacking experiential deity and finding God the Mother, buried within the subtext of the Urantia Book. I'm Brad Garner, and I'm so glad that you're here with us live or in our archive at symmetryofsoul.org. I'm here with my three co-hosts, Andrea Barnes, Kermit Anderson, and Dr. Chris Halverson. Dr. Chris Halverson, of course, is our teacher in this, and we are, the rest of us, the able and willing students. At least we try to be when we're at our best. Glad that you're here. Call up the text of the Urantia Book and take a virtual seat with us. Good evening, Dr. Chris.
Good evening, Brad. Hello, Andrea, Kermit, everyone that could join us live this evening.
Good evening, Andrea.
No, I'm doing great. It's a bit hot, but that's okay. We're going to get through it.
That's right.
And how you doing, Kermit? Do you have a review for us?
We briefly explored the necessity for cultivating a reflective, teachable mind throughout life, in contrast to a natural tendency with age to routinize life tasks to a point of near mechanization. Only a reflective mind can hope to find engagement with spirit and thereby progress cosmically. In meeting the demands of our second master in this life, it is of cardinal importance to employ and cultivate the teachable agitant mind as well as the higher functions of the spiritualized mind and counteract the drag of material gravity to mechanical levels. Stop to ponder that mind energy is teachable by virtue of its transcendent and immediate relationship to deity. Reprising section 4, paragraph 12 from the week previous, wherein mortal man, the creature, is cited as necessary for the fulfillment of the function of God the Sevenfold, we refer to the foreword, section 1, where we note the list of the seven functional levels of total deity, to wit, evolutional, creature-identified deity, and number 6, supreme, creature-creator-unifying deity. Also recall the short discussion we had about the serviceability of using a relatively true concept frame even with a limited intellect in the philosophic quest for truth. Mere brilliance of mind can never make up for a false concept frame. Anyone remember Lucifer and how that worked out? We began our reading in section 5 of paper 116, The Almighty and the Sevenfold Controllers. This section focuses on the power side of the power personality unity of God the Sevenfold. The facet of deity called the Sevenfold, when observed from the reality perspective, reveals an intimacy of the two sets of seven controllers and seven creators. Note this list of controllers is not to be interpreted as complete or comprehensive any more than the seven-item list of the levels of God the Sevenfold is exhaustive. We step through the controller list, noting parallels with the list of the Sevenfold. In keeping with the power nature of the Almighty, the controllers are referred to in terms less personal than the corresponding terms for the personality side of the Sevenfold. For example, controller number 7, the source of paradise, the universal controller, is hardly personal compared with the universal father. And so with controller item number 5, the God of action, the infinite spirit, also known in a more personal mode as the conjoint actor. Controllers number 3, 2, and 1 match to the supreme creators and collectively can be referred to as the supreme controllers. Not all of these beings making up the controllers are personal. For example, of the 7 flavors of master physical controllers, 4 or 5 are not personalities in a sense recognizable to us. Also of note, the power beings are not in the father's personality circuit, being third source personalities. Interestingly, the power beings are not hierarchically ordered in comparison to the specific levels of universe function assigned to the personality side of the sevenfold. They do, however, function as a system of reflectivity, with the Ancients of Days serving as a center point fulcrum in parallel with and corresponding to the seven power centers. Throughout our discussion, we find hints that suggest we avoid time-based thinking in favor of the eternal perspective. Through synthetic logic, we are led to recognize that the power, personality, unity, function of God the Sevenfold, when viewed in the reality viewpoint, requires, in addition to the parallel sets of seven creators and seven controllers, the mind functions of the seven spirit person cosmic mothers to hold the system together in a cosmic triunity. Recall that our personal psychic circle attainment is a function of cosmic triune levels of harmony. Due to the incomplete state of the evolving grand universe, there are local universes already settled in light and life, as well as local universes yet to be formed. The universe power directors must manage these already settled regions in balance with emerging universe domains in the process of development. Even these physically powerful beings must struggle in perfecting their realms of responsibility. Stop to consider what their role might be with respect to protecting and ensuring the physical well-being of our own planet Urantia, the world of the cross, it being the sentimental shrine of all Nevadon, the chief of 10 million inhabited worlds, the mortal home of Christ Michael, sovereign of all Nevadon. And here ends the summary.
Thank you for the review, Kermit. Plenty of material to recap. I think you spent a fair bit of time on it, as I did on my notes. There's a lot to digest, but I can report that things are making sense. The power beings are still, well, as we said last week, they're remote to us. They're all but previously unrevealed to us here on our planet. And it's probably very hard to draw analogies to anything in our experience with them. But we're grateful that the Revelators attempt, and I'm grateful, Dr. Chris, for you walking us through them last week. Is there anything on anyone's mind in particular?
Well, just one little thing that I caught as you were going through that summary, Kermit. I believe if I heard you correctly, when you're talking about the reflectivity system of beings, the point that I made is not that the power beings, that the supreme controllers, are directly involved in that. The point is that in that system of beings, the Ancients of Days are at the center of symmetry in that system of beings. So it's a way of recognizing the Ancients of Days in a certain context as being centers, and noting that when you put the sevenfold creators alongside and parallel to the sevenfold controllers, those three levels lining up, the Ancients of Days line up with the supreme power centers.
Right.
See, so it's you know, it's just noticing that despite what you initially know about the Ancients of Days, you know, maybe not seeming quite as center-like, they are, you know, and that's in addition to, as I pointed out, what the Revelators did immediately point out as we were reading about them here in this paper, calling the Ancients of Days fulcrums.
Right.
Obviously, just in a simple sense, if you have a list of three groups of beings, the group of beings in the middle of the list, you know, are at a relative fulcrum or a center point. But to see the ways in which you can think of the ancients of days as centers in an even greater context. And so, you know, clearing up a bit of the mystery of how you think about those three levels of controllers and creators lining up, pairing up.
Right.
Yeah, that was an interesting, as we walked through the list of the sevenfold controllers, just one by one, I really appreciated, as I said last week, the time that we took to say, why is this here, and why is it in the position that it is here, and how can we understand how it corresponds to the matching number in the sevenfold creators on the other side. So the walkthrough of the Supreme Power Centers was especially helpful, as was describing the Master Physical Controllers being paired with the Master Creator Sons, if you invoke their name in its fullness. It's a fascinating exploration of the list.
Yeah, so even if we can't fully understand all of the physics of how this all works from our lowly position here, as they'll remind us as we start reading tonight, we can at least note that they're hinting at some sort of parallel by the fact that they construct their names in such parallel and reciprocal fashion, Master Physical Controllers,
mm-hmm.
Master Creator Sons. At least there's something initial to hold on to, even if it's just kind of nominal, in a literal sense. Name only.
So a different question I had, I found that we spent a lot of time talking about how the two lists of creators and controllers might parallel each other, but without fully digressing into paper 29, which is not the purpose of this arc, is there anything useful that we can say about the difference between a power director and a power center that might be relevant to this experiential deity arc that we're in right now? Right now, they're mostly just terms and names to me. I've never really plumbed their depths much.
Well, I mean, the directors, just think of them as very much the over controllers of this, back on the aisle, and actually out there in the field, you've got a distribution grid, and there are nodes in that grid, made literal by beings called Supreme Power Centers.
Yeah.
And then there's those that facilitate laying out the lines of distribution of the energy, and then function at the ends of those lines as the mobile application points for the energy that's being distributed.
Hmm. Yeah.
So you want to think of it all very literally, right? And the reason that this is not obvious when you look out in the heavens with telescopes is because this energy that they're distributing is sub-electronic level.
Right.
So
yes.
It's nothing that we currently have any concept of its existence or any means of measuring it, its presence. So.
Right.
That fact that there's all of this activity of coordinating the Milky Way galaxy like this, we aren't aware of this either because it's not directly observable to us right now, or in the case of stuff that would indicate how controlled the galaxy is, that's blocked from my view by our limited ability to see very far through all of the gas and dust that obscures all we can really see beyond our immediate location in the Milky Way galaxy is the low-level matter in the Milky Way galaxy that is not being actively controlled right now and shows no signs of that precise control.
Yeah.
Hydrogen clouds, say, right? Things are a long ways away from cleaning up, the dust on the floor like that, right? But the power beings are definitely seeing to a control of the distribution of suns in the galaxy, of stars in the galaxy. Things are broken up into, you know, the biggies are broken up into 10 pi wedges of the major sectors. And, you know, if we had any visual of that, that would immediately dispel our silly, foolish, ignorant notions that, you know, it's all just an arbitrary collection of matter doing whatever matter wants to do.
Although we're told that we are still Agendonters here, there is something of value in our experience just purely as faith sons here, without any kind of direct empirical evidence, not in any direct sense, not staring us in the face of some supermaterial order to things, and that seems to be of use, of value to us and to the cosmos. Maybe there'll come a day when that's no longer applicable here, but for now, all of our detectors are purely at the electronic level, and our view is very circumscribed, so it is what it is.
Yeah, we know nothing of the foundations of the whole energy system. And and again, just astronomical viewing wise, again, because we're in the plane of all this gas and dust and this disk of material, it would also radically transform our sense of the greater universe if we could see that there was an ordered collection of seven galaxies like the Milky Way around a center of all things. You know, that would say something just in and itself.
Yeah.
The distortions that we're subject to in being able to get a sense of the greater geometry of the entire master universe. If we weren't subject to those distortions, you know, you could get a sense that it's not just an accidental phenomenon of some bang. Just, you know, having seven galaxies different than all the millions of others, and in such a, you know, in a plain and in ordered fashion around a center, you know, we would immediately go, maybe the universe isn't just an arbitrary phenomenon that came out of nothing and is hence purposeless.
They speak somewhere to the idea that none of our observations are going to disclose to us a lot of these things because of, I'm not sure what because of, but beyond what you've said, they certainly talk about the distortions of rotation and circulation and so forth, but maybe it's the electronic
point from which we're forced to view all this. You know, it just makes it very limited.
Yeah, maybe it's the and also the this electronic and sub-electronic aspects that you just mentioned. That's probably part of it as well.
Anyway, just, you know, not to go off on too much of the details of all that, but it. Again, the reason the Revelators tell us all of these details about the patterns of the greater cosmology of things is because we can't just, you know, make better telescopes and figure this out ourselves.
Yeah.
The degree to which we, you know, we have or can, in the not-too-distant future, figure this stuff out, they weren't allowed to tell us such things. You know, they're only telling us the stuff that we can't figure out. You know, we need to have this bigger picture so that what we can observe, you know, is put in the proper context instead of some, you know, imagining of that which is unobservable, you know, that puts everything in a false context. Puts everything we can observe, you know, in an imagined false context, which is what we're doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So every time you read some new article of, you know, astronomers made blah 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 discovery, it's like, yeah, okay, but everything they describe basically is improperly interpreted because it's put in this false concept frame of what we imagine things really are because we can't observe it properly.
Well, sure. Yeah. Just in the last 3 days, I've seen in the popular press articles about how the universe will end in a few trillion years. I saw it's not a, that another one about it wasn't a big bang, maybe it's a big bounce. Another one that maybe the universe is a billion years younger than we previously thought. And not a one of them mentioned anything about power directors or power centers. It's astonishing that they were getting the wrong answers.
Yeah, not to mention force organizers and, you know, even greater phenomena, right, than these power beings.
Well, I hope you wrote him a letter, Brad, and filled him in.
Oh, you know that's in my priority right now, yeah. No.
We have enough difficulty sorting out these issues amongst devoted readers, let alone trying to go out to the greater public, you know, with sorting out their issues.
Yeah.
Who am I to interfere with a physicist's ability to secure his or her livelihood and feed his or her family by publishing papers like this? I don't think that's my job.
Yeah, it's not like they're the only ones publishing false papers on the planet, or over the last million years. Basically, everything humans have written is false. They just joined the club, is all.
Let it be.
Yep, it's part of the evolutionary process, which we are going to be studying more tonight. We are very much in an evolutionary system that needs to be appreciated in order to be understood.
Agreed. I'm looking forward to our study this evening. I guess we'll find out, but it strikes me that relative to the previous five sections, these may be a bit of a breath of less dense air. We'll see. We'll see where Dr. Chris takes us. Is there anything else on anyone's mind? I know we often talk for about an hour here, but I think we have a fair bit of material. We're striving to reach the end of this paper this evening. So anything else before we start our study?
I'm set to go.
All right.
Good enough.
We are in paper 116 of the Urantia book, The Almighty Supreme. Tonight, section 6, Spirit Dominance, on page 1275 of the original single column text. In the evolutionary super universes, energy matter is dominant except in personality, where spirit, through the mediation of mind, is struggling for the mastery. The goal of the evolutionary universes is the subjugation of energy matter by mind, the coordination of mind with spirit, and all of this by virtue of the creative and unifying presence of personality. Thus, in relation to personality, do physical systems become subordinate, mind systems coordinate, and spirit systems directive?
So, two sort of analogies that they will be working with tonight. One, where we're attempting to think about the elements that make up finite reality, visualize it, analogize it in more objective ways, and then also in more subjective ways. But the heights of subjective, you know, as they're pointing out here, if you think about things from the vantage point of personality, you know, how can you analogize how it all fits together? If you can consider the associations amongst the elements and you put personality superordinate, right, then, you know, how can you think about the other elements? But notice that the first sentence starts out apart from that. It's like, well, what if you think about the physical system or physical systems of the finite domain, at least temporarily abstracted from any immediacy of personality over control, and what do you see? You know, so they say in the evolutionary super universes, energy matter is dominant. Okay, now, how can you understand the validity of starting out this section with that statement, energy matter is dominant, when the title of the section is Spirit Dominance? Okay. Seems to be off to an odd start relative to the title. And we've talked about this some already. Remember, there's out here in the finite, there appears to be two distinctly separate modes through which the system, you know, the entire system is purposed, through which it is patterned. So, thinking about those words in rough synonymous terms, to be patterned, to be purposed. What the revelators mean by the word pattern in all these papers. That on the one hand, we have what we call energy pattern. See, and the purposing therein. And on the completely other hand, we have spirit pattern and the purposing therein.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we have this apparent complete separation between energy and spirit, and hence two very distinct modes of purposing. So if you purpose energy, you pattern energy, you get power. Power is purposed energy. And when you are thinking about that that way of using a distinction of words, energy on the one hand, power on the other hand, or power is purposed energy, when you're talking about said power, you're talking about getting to a phenomenon that is much more, that we're much more familiar with in our studies of the physical systems, that electronic level,
mm-hmm.
where you have, you know, in general, a phenomenon like mass, or you tend to use the term matter because it seems to be a very individuated system. We've, for centuries, tended to want to model it with the billiard ball model because it's so extensively individuated, broken up into little nuggets. And mm-hmm. remember how I pointed mm-hmm. out that in the Revelation, they use the word matter in contrast to energy, generalized energy, as indicating that you're dealing now with individuated energy, not something that is, that is more ubiquitous, if I can put it that way, more spread out, less localized.
Yeah, sure.
So notice that they've got, they instead of just saying energy and in contrast spirit, they said energy hyphen matter, in that order. Matter hyphen energy. So the foundational fact that they're building upon is the word matter, this individuated thing, where we're thinking much more in terms of pattern and purposing, right? That, so foundationally it's purposed, and then there's this sort of the associated energy that, maybe is not as definitively purposed yet, or is a means to more purposed phenomena, or is a means of supporting or manifesting more purposed phenomena, or what have you, right? Kind of derivative from the more foundationally purposed. See, so if you set the purposing from of personality aside, you have foundationally energy pattern. You have that purposing and that dominance. See, of that purposing. And then if you bring in personality and engaging spirit and through the mediation of mind, coming at matter through mind, right, you have an additional purposing, or so it appears from our perspective. And we might even analogize that the personality purposing is through the front door, whereas the energy purposing is through the back door.
Personality is something we're familiar with, but is this because, again, the power beings are not that familiar to us, so it's a bit of a backdoor phenomenon? Is that what you mean?
Well, not so much that as just the purposing that comes into play from personality, from spirit pattern, is very overt. You know, we have the word purpose. You know, for instance, we talk about there is a man with a purpose, as if he's consciously chosen to set himself in a certain direction.
Sure. Right? Yeah.
And we're all kind of aware of how that wasn't there, you know, and it wouldn't have been there unless he chose it to be there, etc. But we tend to miss the fact that an oxygen atom is also purposed, because it just came to us that way. You know, we don't experience it, as not yet purposed energy, you know, and then being brought into formation and embodying purpose. Right? It's not a coincidence that oxygen has all these very useful applications.
It's
like
been purposed.
Respiration and stuff, right?
But it's been purposed, but it's always been there for all of our lives and all human life here, so we barely notice it. We have nothing to contrast it with.
Yeah. If we were aware of the whole sub-electronic domain, then we would be much more aware of things starting out in very unpurposed, raw material, quote-unquote, fashion, and being purposed, you know, as universe power.
Hmm.
You know, we would be fully aware of it starting with no individuation at all as primordial force, as the force charge of space, you know, pervading all space, and we would see the beginnings of its individuation as automatons, you know, becoming the foundational matter and building up until finally you have the foundation of the electronic level as a system of 100 automatons and et cetera. So that's the whole point, is that, you know, the pattern, the purposing is what's dominant. The universe is mind made and personality managed, or in a more general sense, pattern purposed. That's the dominance. The purposing is the master.
I'm with you. That makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was just linking it back. This is a deity. This is a deity function. This purposing, pre-purposing that we don't even recognize as purposing until we start reading the revelation.
Yeah, and so this pattern, you know, is a transcendent deity functioning influence upon,
yeah,
you know,
okay,
reality. And,
right,
you know, as they go on, you know, so because of its transcendence, you know, you can think of it as encompassing, you know, even the full threefold energy system of matter, mind, and spirit. So that's, you know, that first sentence continues. It's like, well, what if we think about this personality influence, you know, encompassing, you know, in a direct fashion, you know, a threefold system, so that, you know, I have a personality, for instance, that spirit pattern, that I can identify to, you know, the spirit influencing my mind, and then through that mind, I can form an intention with a motive behind it, a purpose that then plays out in matter as mind dominates matter. You know, and I can struggle for the mastery of that matter, starting with my body. You know, like
mm-hmm.
controlling my tongue, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Giving my tongue some greater purpose. So,
giving it a tongue lashing.
See, that's what they're getting at, you know, but it's helpful before you start just thinking about personality identifying with spirit, and spirit being dominant over mind, and mind being dominant over matter, like my tongue and all that. It's like, well, okay, but don't forget, you know, there's also just energy, matter in general, and, you know, you're thinking, well, I haven't gotten to that, to purposing it yet. It's like, well, be a little humble about that, because before you even thought of bringing personality purposing into play, that matter was purposed through the back door, right, as it were, relative to personality being the front door, right? And so long term, one has to humbly consider how to harmonize the pre-existent purposing with this newfound free will purposing that you'd love to bring into play.
Yeah.
Right. Rather than thinking, well, there's no purposing there. Right. So when they say subjugation of energy matter, you know, that's just fully prideful subjugation because, boy, there's no pre-existent purposing in the energy matter that I'm subjugating, that I'm putting under the yoke that is the slave to my master.
Right.
So, all that is in there. And just one little side note, because before we get to talking about all this bit about coordinate, just a little thing to note, another little side benefit, a little corollary of not just saying energy, but saying energy hyphen matter, is you ever thought about where the word matter comes from, etymologically?
No.
Mother.
Mother.
Oh, wow, yeah. Really?
Drop one of the T's. Ta-da, you got the word mother.
Mater.
Right?
Mater in Latin, yes.
Yes. All right.
Huh. I was wondering if the word, when they say, and all of this by virtue of the creative and unifying presence of personality, is the word virtue sort of there for a reason? Seems like it.
Yeah. Right. I mean, all this. Yeah. I mean, you can get into the details like that. Just thinking about what is sort of very overt for those, since I've pointed out all the time, we've got this word coordination and coordinate going on here. Right. All of this is fundamentally in the context of the mother.
Mm, right.
You know, whether it's the foundational thing of matter, which is an awful lot like the word mother, or things that are more need to be more overtly talked about, like the coordination of mind with spirit. Like we think about, you know, the spirit hyphen mind presence of the creative mother spirit in our local universe. Boy, we're putting a hyphen between them. Sounds kind of coordinate.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You say directly the coordination of mind with spirit, and then you remind yourself of the word matter, and it's like, oh, this is all mother in a triunity.
Oh, wow.
Hmm.
Right? So then when they say thus, in relation to personality, do physical systems become subordinate? You know, mind systems coordinate, and spirit systems directive. Well, we see, okay, we immediately notice coordinate, the word, full word, is right there with mind systems. So ordinate. There's an order. There's an objective order. And with. You would like to put your mind systems with that order. Wonder if that's like consecrating my mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, that's exactly like that.
Does sound like what
there
we can do with mind, yeah.
Right. The order is the universal harmony of God the Mother. That's the order. And you're putting your mind with that order, Right? You are consecrating your mind to the order, to the universal harmony of God the Mother. Right? That's the immediacy of the synchronization. And then you can think, you know, you can use expressions like the fact that, you know, the element that you got from God as transcendence, God the Father, the personality, that would be superordinate then. It's from without the order. And then very immediately I can understand physical systems as being subordinate to my mind synchronized with the order. And then now let's think about, you know, the spirit system's directive. Well, you know, it's one thing if we think in that vertical stack of personality over spirit over mind over matter. But we also at times talk about thinking about matter and spirit side by side in a plane, and super additively above that being the mind.
We do.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. And notice the very fact that they didn't put some kind of ordinate word with the spirit opens you up to thinking about that. And one simple way to do that is to take the hint from the word that they did put there. Instead of saying some ordinate word, they said directive. So you have the I-V-E suffix, directive. So tending to, inclined, you know, very much thinking of like a potential. You know, we've got this mastery. I mean, those physical systems, see, in a parallel way to talk about them, so if the spirit systems are directive, the physical systems are directed.
Mm-hmm.
And the mind systems are directing. So the super additive consequence of the relationship between directed and directive is directing. I'm using a root word that's the same, so I can kind of think of it as a threefold system like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And then the personality would be the director.
Now, this directive quality they're ascribing to spirit, it's like we're adding another layer to this triune matter, mind, spirit triunity. Because remember the whole debate about spirit being innately divine, and where does the directiveness of spirit come from?
The potential's divine. The problem is thinking that you're talking about an actuality of divinity instead of a potentiality of divinity. Yeah.
So
spirit, you know, you're thinking in this personality system.
All right. So the direct, as I'm just trying to get it, the directive quality that spirit has. It's certainly a higher order than simply a substance.
Right. Well, but again, it's, you know, when you think in personality vertical terms, spirit dominates mind. Right? So it's spirit dominance is the title of the section. So, you know, it's directive in that sense.
We do have seem to have competing analogies. I mean, the
vertical that's what I'm getting at.
And the super additive
stack. You know, and the reason I'm doing it is you know, we tend to think of things very temporally. And just to challenge that, you know, if I say directed, okay, that sounds like very temporal statement. But if I purposely use the same, you know, root word here for all four, director, directed, directing, directive, now just kind of, you know, set time aside and just think of it. I have directed juxtaposed with directive side by side, not temporally. Right? And the super additive is this innately universe of motion dynamic of directing with an existential observer point above called the director. So, and the father related to that superordinate, that director, and the mother related to the innately dynamic, you know, universe of motion directing. And then matter and spirit take on these, out of the immediacy of what's in play, mechanisms of how things fit together. If that is making any sense. Right? I mean, you know, it's important to remember you will never know directly matter or spirit. They will always be out of the immediacy of experience. The only thing you can experience is what's in the mind systems. Right? You can't experience spirit systems or physical systems in a direct sense.
One of our friends in the chat room sort of hinted or directed my thinking. I'm still stuck on the spirit having a directive quality before personality does anything to it, or with it, or on it.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
it's
the personality
got a motion of its
going
own
to actualize that potential. It's going to put into play that inclination. I mean, spirit.
Our
I mean,
friend in
spirit
the...
doesn't just aggressively go after mind and have its way with it.
Right.
Right.
In and of itself.
Right.
Spirit
well,
marauding through
the
universe,
that...
having its way with mind energy.
No. Right. Right. Well, the quality
see,
that
so it's not,
that are
it's not directing innately. It's just inclined to that. It's directive.
The quality that our chat room friend pointed out was the animated nature, the self-animated nature of spirit, having encompassing the directive quality.
Now, yeah, but that's not,
that
not that's not that, you shouldn't think that way. I mean, that's just more if I build a body out of spirit substance, I don't have to add life animation to it. It's already there. Everything is active already, not because it's touched by life animation, but because it's touched by the Paradise Trinity. Everything is inclined to do active, just innately. We're using the word directive because it's in this context of we want to have this chain of purposing, if we're thinking vertically, this chain of purposing come down through to matter and be mastered. That chain of purposing, like a vertical arrow going down like a direction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Right.
We're using this word directive because of that. Right? It's where this chain begins in substance. Right, it begins in essence in the personality, the pattern, but in substance it begins with the spirit substance and goes down through the mind energy to the matter. This line of direction.
Okay, this is going to take a while for it to sink in. I'm processing this.
Okay. But one thing I was going to say, I mean, notice that if you look up the word directive in the dictionary, you're going to see, well, it basically means directing. Okay, that's too blurry.
Mm-hmm.
We need
mm-hmm.
to use the difference between the word directive and directing. I mean, humans have never separated spirit from mind in any philosophic
right.
system. Okay,
that's
so
true.
It's not surprising that the dictionary would treat directing and directive as synonyms. Right? Or active and acting as synonyms.
Well, Kermit, let
right.
it sit with it for a while. Remember, mind is unifying of all divergencies. So now we have some divergences in our suffixes. So have at it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But
yes. Okay.
Yeah, but see, think about. I mean, another thing about putting directive and directed side by side. It's like, well, you can't do that. I mean, there's a temporal sequence, right? I mean, one's at the beginning and one's at the end. It's like, well, yeah, so it appears from the time viewpoint, but think about it less temporally. And a similar thing of you juxtaposing yourself as perfected, so-called perfected, with that which is perfect in Havona and having a super additive consequence between the two of you.
Oh, dear.
So, and thinking about the central universe where these perfect beings are as the pattern universe, so that perfectness is really kind of a pattern, that gives an initial inclination to the super universe level to be, heading towards perfected and, through perfectingness. Okay? See, I mean, the whole point of this exercise is to start to have words that you can juxtapose and see if you can think about it less in just a time viewpoint perspective.
We keep
right?
running
and
into
get,
that.
Get a more existential sense of what's being juxtaposed. Right? That in reality, the end is side by side with the beginning. Because time's not a reality. Mm-hmm. Right? So
right.
The end, directed, is there right there with the beginning, directive. They are side by side.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
It's just, even though it's not literally possible to let go of the temporal viewpoint, I mean, you only have temporal words to even describe it, so you've always got it kind of there nagging at you. But to see if you can use your God-given gifts to begin to feel how the system works beyond how it appears from the time viewpoint.
Yeah.
Okay.
You used the word feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Right? Because, again, it's the only word we can have for, you know, to describe kind of the direct experience of a recognition.
What's the intuitive kind of aspect to it? Yeah.
Right. My objective recognition casts a shadow down on the level of the feelings, and I feel it. This is the only way we can really think about it in any immediate experiential sense. Is it? It feels like.
Yes.
Blah, right? You know, a lot of the meat, see, is in this very first paragraph.
It deserves.
Just be fleshed out, because then the remaining paragraphs we can just think how they're speaking to the basic picture that we've got all laid out already by unpacking this paragraph.
Okay.
I mean, in many ways they just kind of repeat repeatedly.
This union of power and personality is expressive on deity levels in and as the Supreme. But the actual evolution of spirit dominance is a growth which is predicated on the free will acts of the creators and creatures of the grand universe.
And so notice how it starts out. Power juxtaposed with personality, the two types of purposing, the two patterns. They didn't say power directly in the first paragraph. You know, they just said matter. Foundationally relative to energy, and right, so all that unpacking I did, right, they then summarized what I just unpacked. This union of power and personality that Chris was just talking about, because the paragraph didn't directly talk about it, but I just did when I unpacked the paragraph, making the full ellipse, you know, connecting the back door with the front door, right, bringing it into full elliptical harmony. See, with the humility that must be there with the personality side of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, this is all expressive from the bottom up on non-thingness levels, on deity levels, in and as the Supreme. But again, thinking about this evolution of spirit dominance, right, of this growth, this perfecting spirit.
Yeah.
Remember,
yeah.
Growth is perfecting spirit. See, paired with spirit dominance.
Ultimately, depending on personality, right?
Yeah, right. To think about how, you know, where you fit into all this whole system. It's like you have an inroad. Right? You don't get to define spirit substance or mind energy or energy matter, right? Or energy pattern or whatnot, or, you know, even life animation. You know, it's kind of between the lines on some of this, too. But I have free will. I have an entry point into this whole system called my personality. That deity-like, you know, influence from eternity that I can encompass what matter, mind, and spirit is put into my hands and acknowledge the pre-existent purposing and be aware of the harmony of the triune system. As a suggestion of what I should be doing with my free will, purposing potential in my personality, so that I'm not cross purposes with the system. Because eventually that means I will cease to exist.
And we don't want that.
When the grace runs out. All right?
Well, it just occurs to me that over the eons, institutionalized religion, primitive though it may have been, ghost culty though it may have been, seems to have been trying to help us. I mean, everything you're describing, Chris, is very sophisticated. It's of epical revelatory significance. But primitive institutional religions have been trying to give people a sense of, like, well, you can do this in your life. And it's a bit of a paradox to me because in some ways by religion doctrinally telling you do this and do this and you will be happy, or do this and this and you'll have meaning, seems a little like it's to abrogating your free will. But on the other hand, if you don't know how to wisely use free will and personality anyway, maybe for a million years it's been okay that someone's been out there trying to tell you what you ought to do based on revelations of the past.
Yeah, or just best guesses. I mean, knowing that eventually it has to be free will, liberty in absolute law, let's start getting you used to that. Right? There are thou shalt nots, period. Okay?
Yeah.
Right? You know, and yeah, but humans thought that up. No, they didn't.
No.
Not totally. Prince's staff said, thou shalt not, thou shalt not. You start putting boundary lines in play. Why can't I do that? Because I said so.
Oh, Dad,
that's
Mom.
That's how it starts.
Yeah.
Yeah, but just, you know, and then here before we go on, you know, remember the literalness that we've been talking about all along of that, you know, what they mean by predicated on the free will acts, right? That summation of the Almighty, right? The in, the supreme of the Almighty. Right, that all these free will acts of the creators and creatures, right, you know, leads to a summation, you know, that is the Almighty.
On absolute levels, energy and spirit are one. But the moment departure is made from such absolute levels, difference appears. And as energy and spirit move spaceward from paradise, the gulf between them widens, until in the local universes they have become quite divergent. They are no longer identical. Neither are they alike. And mind must intervene to interrelate them.
They're no longer identical. They're no longer the same. Neither are they alike. Neither are they similar. Right? Not the same, not similar. Okay, so here we're thinking about this bifurcation. You know, but they're reminding us of not to over-existentialize this, right, that you're engaging your, you know, even time viewpoint, but experiential appearance relationship to this. No, and the first sentence could get you astray if you have forgotten about what it said in paper 42, or if you haven't read to the end of this section. You know, when they say on absolute levels energy and spirit are one, they don't mean in reality. You know, for instance, they don't mean in reality the Isle of Paradise and the Eternal Sun are the same fact. No. You know, it's in that sentence goes with the next sentence. See, so the moment departure is made from these such absolute levels, difference appears. So on absolute levels, difference does not appear. That's what we mean by energy and spirit are one.
Yeah.
That's shorthand for on absolute levels, the difference does not appear. It's there in reality, but not in appearance. No sub-absolute being can see a difference. Looks like the same stuff to me, everyone says.
Those are the rules up there at the absolute level.
Because it takes absolute discrimination, right? And you don't have it. Even beings way above your pay grade don't have it. That co-absolute being over there, nope, doesn't have it. Now, that co-absolute being doesn't have it by sight, but their insight does transcend up there. They have a quite immediate insight into absolute levels. But so they're just getting at what I was talking about in the beginning with the two patterns. We know that back at the source point, there's just pattern. It's only when it's distributed out that there's a completely different appearance of on the one hand, you have something that, you know, you don't even think of it being bestowed. It's just there, and you think it's just part of matter. And the other one is you're struggling to figure out how to get up there to actually do that instead of just calling your self-assertion your free will.
Yeah.
Okay, so they're very much different. These, you know, out here, in the local universe perspective of things, the difference between energy pattern and spirit pattern, between power and personality. But the Isle of Paradise is not just the absolute of matter, absolutum. It's also the absolute of pattern, energy pattern. You know, just as the Eternal Sun is the personality absolute.
Right.
Yeah. There's more than just energy and spirit, those two blobs.
I'll have to contemplate that. I tended to think of Havona as the pattern universe, which may also be the case, but I haven't thought about the Isle as a source of pattern. But
it's the absolute nucleus of the whole pattern. I mean, it's just if you want the central universe is the pattern, and the Isle's the pattern control.
Well, there you go. I can see that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, before we go on, we have a caller.
Oh, thanks for taking my question real quick. What Brad said about that pattern, Chris, when you say it distributes out and it becomes two patterns, I think you said? In the beginning, it's just one purpose.
It's really one pattern, but it appears to be two.
Yeah. Is that a question fairly to say we'll never understand why that is?
Well, when you see, as they'll point out here, when you see how perfectly the two patterns dance together in the central universe, you'll begin to have an insight in how this is really one pattern. Right? But until then, till you experience the central universe, right, this will be something that you just kind of abstractly, you know about, but you know, it's still a bit mysterious to you.
Is it also just like Moda? We can't understand Moda until we are in the next mansion world. Same thing.
Right. Yeah. There's always some fact, you know, ahead of us that, you know, we can talk about now or think we're talking about, but not really. You know, we really don't have a clue about what we're really talking about. Yeah, but once you're there, you go, oh, I get it. It's like, okay, no wonder I couldn't think about it back then. I mean, I couldn't remotely think in such synthetic terms back then.
Okay. Thank you for taking my question. Appreciate it.
You bet.
Thanks, Winston.
Thank you, Winston. Andrea, would you care to take the reading from here?
Sure. Thank you, Brad. That energy can be directionized by the action of controller personalities discloses the responsiveness of energy to mind action. That mass can be stabilized through the action of these same controlling entities indicates the responsiveness of mass to the order-producing presence of mind, and that spirit itself in volitional personality can strive through mind for the mastery of energy matter discloses the potential unity of all finite creation.
So just, you know, again, that last part, encouraging you to think about it in as much triune fashion as possible. When they say discloses the potential unity, to be more precise, what kind of unity are we talking about there? A triunity. It's a threefold continuumness of all finite creation.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Not a singular continuumness, if you will. You know, and that the transcendent fact of personality can bring that to pass with the help of the mother. The other thing just to notice is how the technical of directionizing energy, stabilizing mass. Remember, I was talking about going from just kind of the minimalness of individuation of matter, you know, up to eventually you have mass. Right? I mean, if you think of mass as a fundamental foundational property, speaking of it as being stabilized is gibberish.
Yeah.
Right. But when you recognize, you know, that that property is a construct, that you have to construct it just so, so that that construct is stable. And those power beings are involved, and you know, in general, they're involved in bringing things from the automaton all the way up to the electronic level, and then they let go of it. But there are those that take it even further, like primary associators, and then actually play with it in that fully purposed mode of you know, what we would think of as taking those billiard balls of matter, of mass, and putting them together into a fancy system that a life carrier can bestow life animation upon, and you've got a prokaryote.
Yeah, that's what they mean by stabilizing of mass. That's one instance of it there.
Yeah, why would you want to stabilize it? Well, you know, for a lot of reasons, obviously, but yeah, if you're going to use it as the foundation for living things, it needs to be stable foundation.
It does. It does.
Very, very stable.
We're talking about layers upon layers of purpose that I've just never thought of before. You think of purpose ending at a certain level beyond which a mechanism takes place or something.
Yeah.
But even mechanism has its purpose within it.
They're pointing out, you know, when we think of building mechanisms out of the billiard balls, it's like, yeah, but have you thought about the billiard balls? They were built too.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no level to which you can peer into that it isn't the result of deity purpose.
Right. It's nothing but purpose. Right. And yeah, so like I said, if you could observe the power beings working, you know, up through the hierarchy of the sub-electronic domain, right, you would see that that purposing isn't just innately there. It came to be applied once things were properly constructed.
Yeah.
It came to be present would be a more proper way to say it.
Yeah. Okay.
This is a much more satisfying concept frame than the one that underlied those three papers I told you about earlier, which is a pretty nihilistic concept frame. Here it's a universe of purpose, as opposed to a universe that's just going to fizzle out and bounce around and do whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you like the magic man, you know, with his infinite number of micromanagement puppet strings, well, there is an aspect of that. There's a lot of power beings. It's essentially an infinite set of puppet strings, you know, and they're right down there in the nitty-gritty details of, here's one automaton, need a puppet string on it. Here's another automaton, need a puppet string on that.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Holding everything
together.
They're
the ultimate micromanagers of automaton, see?
Yeah. But they're third-source personalities, or they're non-personalities.
Or
they're
not at all,
entities.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Machines.
But you get
purpose
to the fifth stage of light and life, and okay, if you're delighting in God the micromanager, okay, you'll have it there in the fifth stage of light and life.
There is an interdependence of all forces and personalities throughout the universe of universes. Creator sons and creative spirits depend on the cooperative function of the power centers and physical controllers in the organization of universes. The supreme power directors are incomplete without the overcontrol of the master spirits. In a human being, the mechanism of physical life is responsive, in part, to the dictates of personal mind. This very mind may, in turn, become dominated by the leading of purpose of spirit, and the result of such evolutionary development is the production of a new child of the supreme, a new personal unification of the several kinds of cosmic reality.
And all these kinds of cosmic reality, you've got the matter itself, you know, even some energy identified, you know, associated with it. You've got the life animation, both types of it. You've got mind energy with its energy itself, and then there's a mind activity, and you've got the spirit energy, the spirit substance. You've got the personality, this whole complicated mix, several indeed. And if you get that all in proper coordination, you are now supreme-like, right? You're a child of the Supreme. Because as we've been reading, the Supreme is this integration of all this relative to the whole. Mm-hmm. The part needs to be like that so it can be upheld by the whole.
And that's just on the finite level.
Mm-hmm. And that's just on the finite level. And you know, again, you know, we saw directive. Here you see purposive, see, again,
yeah.
The spirit. So the personality patterns the spirit. Right? I mean, you have a spiritual motive, right, an inclination to motion, right? You have purposive, you have an inclination to purpose. Right? If there's a motive behind that mindful intention, that form in the mind, that's not just an intention, that's a purpose. And that purpose is a purposing phenomenon that can produce purposed material phenomena in your hands. That's not just an arbitrary arrangement of billiard balls, that's a typewriter.
Right.
And again, notice how they're kind of putting not so much the vertical stack, but a little bit more mind super additively above the matter and spirit, so that you think of personality coming down and encompassing. Right? The personal modifier is right there with mind, personal mind. Mm-hmm. And to do that, like I hinted before, personal, father, mind, mother, putting the two parents together.
Hmm.
Consecration of your will to the perfect will of God the Father, consecration of your mind, the universal harmony of God the Mother, the dictates of personal mind.
Yeah.
Hmm. That was lovely.
See, notice how they've got both the power centers and the physical controllers, you know, in play, not in a vertical stack, but, you know, side by side, working with the Creator Sons and Creator Spirits. So, yeah, like we talked about with that, you know, you don't want to think of it as, well, down at the low levels, there's nothing but physical controllers. And then totally above that, in the transcendent layer, the power centers, again, not as, you know, not in as immediate a sense as you might think. Sure, you know,
yeah,
that you could say that the nodes of the system are, you know, are kind of transcendent to the distribution lines of the system. Okay, but that's a pretty abstract hierarchy.
Right.
Yeah. The controllers
yeah.
are not as hierarchical as the creators.
Right. Yeah. Because the physical system is in common throughout, you know, not just the whole grand universe, but the whole outer space levels too. And it's all
it
the
is.
Same matter.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas, you know, in the creator over control sense, you've got local universes, and hierarchically above that, you have super universes, etc. You've got this hierarchy of wombs, and, you know, and the creatorship within those wombs.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Administration.
Yeah.
Okay.
And as it is with the parts, so it is with the whole. The spirit person of supremacy requires the evolutionary power of the Almighty to achieve completion of deity and to attain destiny of Trinity association. The effort is made by the personalities of time and space, but the culmination and consummation of this effort is the act of the Almighty Supreme. And while the growth of the whole is thus a totalizing of the collective growth of the parts, it equally follows that the evolution of the parts is a segmented reflection of the purposive growth of the whole. Like a fractal.
Mm-hmm. You know, and we saw purposive spirit before. See, and if I replace the word growth by perfecting spirit, see, I've got purposive spirit again there. And growth is perfecting spirit. purpose of perfecting spirit. Notice, see, again, you know, the basics, as we've already talked about, how the parts and the whole are in this reciprocal reflection with relative to each other. But notice some of the details up front there. So it is with the whole. Okay, the spirit person of supremacy, that's the universal mother.
Mm-hmm.
The evolutionary power, okay, that's the almighty supreme.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but notice they don't just speak in those purely reality individual terms. Right? They say spirit person of supremacy. Right? It's the functioning of deity on the supreme level, capital S supremacy.
Right.
And then they say the evolutionary power, the almighty supreme, of the almighty, right? The facet of deity, the almighty. Because they go on to say, to achieve completion of deity.
Pointing to Trinity, Trinitarian sovereignty there, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's that.
The destiny of Trinity Association.
But fundamentally, right, thinking about how, you know, constructing a sentence where you've got one eye on reality and one eye on deity, right? You aren't just all simplistically in one perspective or the other. And like you're pointing out, attain the destiny of Trinity Association. Well, various Trinity is a facet of deity. So there's talking about deity, but it's also the only facet of deity that directly engages the totality of reality. So it's like it has two eyes, an eye on reality, an eye on deity, like the sentence did that culminated in mentioning the Paradise Trinity. And, of course, specifically, what are we talking about? Every part has to put itself in cooperative subordination to the whole.
Mm-hmm.
The whole is the Paradise Trinity. Right? When a Michael son leaves Paradise, he swears an oath to the Paradise Trinity. When you get to the Isle of Paradise as a finaliter, you swear an oath to the Paradise Trinity. Right, as I pointed out, the first thing that the part said when he came into existence is, I put myself in cooperative subordination to the whole, the Paradise Trinity.
Hmm. The logical thing to do.
Because you're delusional if you think you're going to be a part outside of the context of the whole. There is no such magical part. You either reflect the whole or you don't exist as a part.
That's cool.
That when you attempt to be a part apart from the whole, it's called oblivion. You cease to exist. Right? There is no such magical thing.
So when you say someone's really oblivious, is there any, you know, anything to that?
There's hyperbole invoked.
Careful with that.
How literally do you mean that, you should say?
So you don't tell people to go to hell anymore. You tell them to go to oblivion.
That's what a Urantia Book reader says. Don't go to hell, go to oblivion. Kermit, you want to take over the reading then?
Be as if you never were.
Yes.
On Paradise, Minota and Spirit are as one, indistinguishable except by name. In Havona, matter and spirit, while distinguishably different, are at the same time innately harmonious. In the seven superuniverses, however, there is great divergence. There is a wide gulf between cosmic energy and divine spirit. Therefore, is there a greater experiential potential for mind action in harmonizing and eventually unifying physical pattern with spiritual purposes? In the time-evolving universes of space, there is greater divinity attenuation, more difficult problems to be solved, and larger opportunity to acquire experience in their solution. And this entire super-universe situation brings into being a larger arena of evolutionary existence in which the possibility of cosmic experience is made available alike to creature and creator, even to supreme deity.
Sounds a little like a restatement of the inevitabilities, doesn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, I told you it would come around again here in this paragraph. So many things, as I've said before, that we read here in these papers, they're hearkening back and, you know, essentially reminding you of something way back earlier in the book, like the whole subordinate, coordinate, whatnot. That should remind you of, you know, what's in paper 112. These discussions should remind you of what's in paper 42. They bring things forward to consider them in this context. For those who don't know, Monoda, that's the absolutum, that's the substance of the aisle. It's a very different type of matter. They describe it as a single form of materialization.
Mm-hmm.
Mono, single.
Yeah, right.
And notice here they say are as one, right? Like I said, it's appearance, not reality. Distinguishable except by name. Indistinguishable except by name. And let's see, anything else there? I mean, again, we've talked this through mostly, right? And even look at how they use the contrast cosmic energy, divine spirit there. But beware of thinking, you know, innately divine.
Mm.
Don't overplay that. Or notice, like I've been saying, notice the direct paralleling of physical pattern with spiritual purposes. Right? Pattern and purpose. Right? Patterson.
Mm-hmm.
A pattern is a purposing influence, if you will. Right? I mean, you can use those words in quite tight interplay.
This whole paragraph has an almighty summative flavor to it, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just so thinking of, like I said, thinking about yourself very organically as a part in the whole. And the final section we'll read here in a second, you know, goes completely, you know, all the way, you know, and talks about it directly like that. It's important, right? To understand supreme deity is to understand yourself, and vice versa. It's all one system, parts and whole.
Okay, the dominance of spirit, which is existential on absolute levels, becomes an evolutionary experience on finite levels and in the seven super universes. And this experience is shared alike by all, from mortal man to the supreme being. All strive, personally strive in the achievement. All participate, personally participate in the destiny.
And I just see the almost pedantic, you know, emphasizing personally strive, personally participate. That's the key ingredient here in all these different elements of the system. Like I said, that's where you actually have a handle. Right, and can really strive, really participate. I mean, everything else is a delusion, right? You have no sovereignty in the external world, etc. Right? So, and then to appreciate this sovereignty, this fundamentally, foundationally absolute sovereignty, humbly in the context of the whole.
That's the only game in town, to be a part of the whole.
Right.
And it's that game or nothing, so get used to it.
It's the way.
My way or the no way. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, Section 7, the living organism of the grand universe. The grand universe is not only a material creation of physical grandeur, spirit sublimity, and intellectual magnitude, it is also a magnificent and responsive living organism. There is actual life pulsating throughout the mechanism of the vast creation of the vibrant cosmos. The physical reality of the universes is symbolic of the perceivable reality of the Almighty Supreme. And this material and living organism is penetrated by intelligent circuits, even as the human body is traversed by a network of neural sensation paths. This physical universe is permeated by energy lanes, which effectively activate material creation, even as the human body is nourished and energized by the circulatory distribution of the assimilable energy products of nourishment. The vast universe is not without those coordinating centers of magnificent overcontrol, which might be compared to the delicate chemical control system of the human mechanism. But if you only knew something about the physique of a power center, we could, by analogy, tell you so much more about the physical universe.
So in other words, you know, even more directly, you could see, the part is the whole, and the whole is the sum of the parts. It's all one system. If you knew their physique, it's like, wow, it's like you took the whole cosmic organism and shrunk it into an individual.
Wow.
They're like little center points, little condensation nuclei of the whole scheme.
That is a bit beyond my imagination. I guess I can follow the analogies here. I mean, honestly, it's a little difficult to not get sort of poetically fuzzed out in a paragraph like that. They're basically saying things that people say over like broad New Age music with soaring visuals, like our circulatory system is like the channels of things in the cosmos, but
is like totally.
You know, a curious feeling creeps over me when I read this. It's like, well, what about me? I feel like I've been subsumed into the ocean.
Exactly. See, you know, that's the challenge. You know, the more that you recognize how much you are, you know, in the image of this whole system, it's like, well, okay, I'm just, there's no escaping. You know, the drop of water is the ocean. And right, see, again, but the role of personality, right?
Yes.
That if you can precisely focus and apply that influence, focus it through the mother, and apply it, right, you can separate the drop from the ocean.
Yeah.
You know, in the same way that I'm very much a fancy animal, but if I apply my personality, I can separate that from the animal, you know, ocean. And it can be a human.
Yeah.
There's a whole hierarchy of that you have to take on the challenge. You know, and then notice it early on there when they say the physical reality of the universe is a symbolic of the perceivable reality of the Almighty Supreme. You know, that how intimate that power fact is with the physical reality they're telling you.
Yeah.
You know, that the essence of the physical system is literally the body of the future supreme being from the time viewpoint. And when all is said and done, you know, we often point out the problematic nature of the suffix ism. Oh, someone's taking some, you know, localized idea and trying to make a complete lifestyle solution out of it.
Okay. That is what usually
this
happens.
Is a complete lifestyle solution, right? This is an ism.
The organism.
Right. The entire cosmos is an organism. Okay.
Wow.
That work is a complete lifestyle solution. That work of art.
Yeah.
Cosmosism.
Touch. Okay. Much as mortals look to solar energy for life maintenance, so does the grand universe depend upon the unfailing energies emanating from nether paradise to sustain the material activities and cosmic motions of space.
So, again, they're going to kind of just do this. I mean, you know, this last section is, in essence, poetic, even if it isn't completely in substance poetic. Right? They mm-hmm. want you to just think about, you know, by kind of appealing to a bit of that that feeling of the poetic, you know, or even quasi New Agey sort of things like Brad was saying, right? That the essence of that, so that but don't go all mystical.
Right.
In very literal sense, right? You are in the image of this whole complex cosmos. You're a child
mm-hmm.
of the Supreme, right? And the part of the Supreme that, in a personal sense, you're a child of, you're a child of the Mother. Right? And as literally as what is nurtured in the womb of a mother, a material mother, is like the mother that's, in wombing it and nurturing it. I mean, this is one system.
Wow.
Your umbilical cord's connected to you in a million ways.
Well, I know I've sometimes say the atheists have a point, but here, yes, the gentle mystics have a point too. They miss a big, they miss part of the picture.
They just, you need to think about it with a physics, right?
Yeah.
All magical
right.
with it. Right? There's a rock solid physics to all this. Yeah. But there's also a poetry to it.
But and you can't be too harsh on those mystics. They didn't have the details. They had a lot of these unity-like realizations and recognitions, but they didn't have the details that they couldn't possibly have.
Right. I mean, basically, when Western people think of mysticism, they're thinking of Middle Ages stuff, which is prior to the Enlightenment. So, of course, it doesn't have any cultural contexting of scientific discovery and the concept of fact and precision and a physics to reality.
Right. No.
Yeah. Right. So, how sad is it that people, choose to jump back over, not just in 3 centuries of the Enlightenment, but the 3 centuries of the Renaissance, too, and plop themselves in the middle of middle-age mysticism?
Well, they don't see any way forward because all they see is nihilism and atheistic nihilism in these papers that get published in the popular press. They say, well, I guess backward is it? They need a revelation.
Right. And here we are. And here it is.
Mm-hmm. If you can keep it.
Thanks. Oh, nice. Thank you, Ben.
Nice call. Good shout out.
Mind has been given to mortals wherewith they may become self-conscious of identity and personality. And mind, even a supreme mind, has been bestowed upon the totality of the finite, whereby the spirit of this emerging personality of the cosmos ever strives for the mastery of energy matter.
Again, the basics, just notice that they're making a point of devoting a little paragraph to one little aspect of it, and speaking in obviously a little bit more back up flowery holistic terms, but that's appropriate. Challenge yourself to not get lost, and noticed a little attempt to ground you in a physics. It's like, wait a minute, what's the difference between identity and personality? They throw in little things like that so that you don't go all mystical fuzzy if you're noticing them. And we could flesh that out, and we kind of did. And I could say I have a material identity, right? That my personality is identified with a foundationally material system, a minded material system, and I can remind myself that there's an energy pattern down in that foundation, And so, kind of apart from personality, I could say that gives it an identity, and if I go through the back door, I wrap all the way around to the top, and there's my personality. You can say there's they're separate because they have an and between them, and yeah, well, but you know, there's the back door also.
Mortal man is responsive to spirit guidance, even as the grand universe responds to the far-flung spirit gravity grasp of the eternal sun. The universal supermaterial cohesion of the eternal spiritual values of all the creations of the finite cosmos of time and space.
Notice the kind of the basic point of that paragraph, to just, you know, in the same way that you can think of very transcendent influences, you know, down upon you as a part, right? There's equally, you know, literally existential transcendent influences down upon the whole of the grand universe, right? Invoking the existential fact of the eternal sun. But remember, how does that spirit gravity grasp be, you know, become far flung? Right, related to time and space,
experience,
because of the eternal mother, son.
Right.
Human beings are capable of making an everlasting self-identification with total and indestructible universe reality, fusion with the indwelling thought adjuster. Likewise, does the supreme everlastingly depend on the absolute stability of original deity, the Paradise Trinity.
Okay. Yeah. They've kind of played with the adjuster Trinity comparison before, but remember how way back in the beginning of all this we talked about the original, the actual, and the potential? You know, and we started out the original, we were thinking very much in a father-like sense. You know, we were kind of thinking of the seven absolutes of infinity. But, see, notice that they've evolved this from, it's like, okay, we started you out with the seven absolutes of infinity as anchor points of reality, the reality perspective, but we've tried to kind of flip you completely around to the other side of the original, instead of being on the first center side of the original, to flip around to the other side of the original, the Paradise Trinity.
The center and source.
And to think much more, you know, maybe not exclusively, but much more in terms of deity than in terms of reality, because we're about to the next paper, and we're going to formally introduce the mother, which stems from the Paradise Trinity as a facet of deity.
Now they're setting a stage.
Man's urge for paradise perfection, his striving for God attainment, creates a genuine divinity tension in the living cosmos, which can only be resolved by the evolution of an immortal soul. This is what happens in the experience of a single mortal creature. But when all creatures and all creators in the grand universe likewise strive for God attainment and divine perfection, there is built up a profound and only find sublime synthesis of almighty power with the spirit person of the evolving God of all creatures, the Supreme Being, sponsored by a mighty messenger temporarily sojourning on Urantia.
Okay, so again we see paralleling the part with the whole, but they threw in a little twist here. Talking about a super additive consequence relative to the part of a soul, an immortal soul. You know, this tension across a differential that has a super additive consequence. I was like, oh, well, then I can probably use the term oversoul, can't I, for the whole, relative to the whole. Yep, that'll come up in the next paper too. Okay. And we'll think about how, in a very direct sense, we can speak of the Oversoul as that transcendent fact, the Supreme Being. But on the other hand, we've noticed the revelators often, relative to us, use the word soul not just for the Marantia object, transcendent of the mind, but for that upper domain in the hourglass analogy of our mind. And so, right, in a sense, you can talk about the Oversoul as being down within, too, you know, as the Supreme. at that facet of deity.
Yeah.
Right. So the word soul and oversoul, you know, can have this twofold modality. And if you look, you know, look at how it's used in the book, you'll see that. And then you were broke up just a little bit as you were reading that last little bit there. But just, you know, to read that again here, Kermit, there is built up a profound cosmic tension, which can only find resolution in the sublime synthesis of almighty power with the spirit person of the evolving God of all creatures, the supreme being. So let's just notice one last time here for the next paper. So almighty power, that's the almighty supreme.
Mm-hmm.
Spirit person, that's the universal mother.
And
okay, you know, those two are being integrated together, right? The synthesis, you know, parenthetically, is comma the supreme being.
Yeah, there right. It is. They keep underscoring.
They're not blurred all together, right? There's three elements there.
These are not synonyms. Mm-hmm. We've spent two papers now disentangling them. Let's hold that disentanglement as we close this paper and go to the next one.
Yeah, the finite God, right, the supreme being, is a God of transcendence relative to the finite. But you're not left alone, right? There's God within also. And it tends to that apparent differential intimately. Power on one side, on the one hand, person on the other hand.
Yeah.
But in reality, it's one.
Yeah.
Transcendently. See why they were talking about energy pattern, spirit pattern, separate, but thinking about how it appears as one, and that's the point.
I just think of all the hours you have put in to make all these amazing connections shared with us, had you not mentioned Mom early on in the series, we'd still be in the dark, and it's a great service. Thank you kindly.
Yeah, and we got a ways to go until we get to section 6 in the next paper. So they're going to build the tension even more before they finally let her out of the bag, as it were.
but we know where we're going.
Yep, we know where we're going here. Yeah, the breadcrumbs are all through.
Onward we proceed with our expertly developed framing devices that Dr. Chris has brought to us. Like you said, he's mentioned Mother Deity right from the beginning. We didn't have to wait until halfway through the next paper. We'll get to the next paper next week. Please join us then. We're glad that you have stayed with us, hopefully, for these last preceding two papers. And we look forward to plunging ahead, experiential deity. Until then, follow the light.
God bless everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Yes. Thank you, everyone. Have a great week. We'll see you next time.